Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. The clocks went back last night. It's the 27th of October 2024. It's actually 7 o'clock, not 8 o'clock, as my clocks in the house say. And this is the audio diary of my life, behind the scenes of a YouTube creator. So, here we are. Here we are in Greenwich Mean Time. Yes. Forgot about that, didn't I? So did Julia. So we got up an hour earlier and I thought, gosh, you know, I'm feeling very groggy this morning. She had to get back. Julia had to get back to her house because her ex is having to go to work, and so she's looking after the children. We have this not very satisfactory situation at the moment, but we are aiming to get a house together where we can all live together. And so Julia doesn't have this. It's some form of abode with some land, which is why we've not really been tackling townhouses and things. Anyway, so gained an hour, which is lovely. And up. I need to go and have a shave. I completely forgot I need to have a shave. So a bit uncouth. Still waiting to hear from YouTube if I can monetize the channel. And it's a curious position to be in now because I don't know whether I want to be monetized or not. I would enjoy the income, of course. But there's that business about being clean hands and not being paid by a corporation. It's But meanwhile, people have been very generous and keeping me going with donations, which has been lovely. So thank you so much if you're one of those. It's really appreciated. And I have been working hard on the interviews and the monologues and answering all the myriad of emails, of course, which is pretty much my life, or has been my life, for the last 2 years. I haven't really managed to get out, other than the trips that we do, which are related to the events that are part of the truth, freedom, movement, or whatever it is. the normal sort of getting out at the weekend, in the week, to the countryside, holidays, you know, proper holidays. All of that, just not done any of it. And now I'm working on my book. And so that's taking up a lot of time and focus. So, but I am pulling back on the interviews for a bit because they are, I think I'm not fed up of them as such. I have some fascinating conversations with people, but I just need a bit of space from it for a bit, because it's tying me down to the house too much, I think. And it's nice to have that slightly relaxing, you know, the weekend. And now I haven't had a weekend that's been free of everything for a long time, even though I filmed 2 videos yesterday. Recorded The Naked Englishman, and spent time answering emails and writing the book. So it never really stops. I never really get to a point where you just can sit back and go, do you know, I'm going to read. I did a little bit of reading, my own reading, but and I did take a stroll out. Yes. Anyway, let's go and have a look at the diarists and see what they were doing. It's funny, isn't it? We're talking about time. I think we were talking about time yesterday and how we're all geared by the clock and then the clocks go back. And I could have done with an extra hour in bed. Anyway, I think I said it was the 27th. Did I say it was the 27th? I think so. Nathaniel Hawthorne, 1857 in Warwickshire, on this day, said, an enormous quantity of withered leaves, too damp to rustle, strewing the paths. The pastures look just as green as ever, a deep, bright verdure that seems almost sunshine in itself, however sombre the sky may be. And that's it. That's just another one entry, which is okay. And that's all good. Yeah, so just trying to get myself awake this morning because I think we lost an hour. Felt like we had more time. The clocks go back, but do we gain an hour as a result of that? I.e., I thought it was 8 o'clock, but it's actually 7. So, I always get this very simple thing. It seems like you've gained an hour because you had an hour in real life, but the clocks are showing that it's not. It's not actually that you have had an hour of your life taken away. You've gained it. We lost it at the beginning of the year, I think. Is it that way around? It seems there's a logic to that, but maybe it's the other way around, that somehow at midnight, I don't know how it works. When does it change? At midnight, it just stops, does it? And no time happens in clock time. In real analog, real world time is happening. But then there's also the whole business that, well, time doesn't exist anyway. So what are we all worried about? Which is a good question. Post came yesterday and 3 books arrived. And I made a video, which it will go out on the Vobes Show channel, another pipe-smoking video in which I smoke my clay pipe for the first time that was given to me. I think I have smoked a clay pipe before. It's an interesting experience. I won't spoil it. And one of the books that came, I read a little passage from. I'm going to go and get the books that I had. Now, these are ones I ordered. I ordered, obviously, secondhand. And I have a horrible feeling I've already got 2 of them. This must be why they resonated to me. But I know I've got certainly 2 by one of the authors. And this may be the 3rd one. I can't remember. I have a feeling I have it, but I couldn't find it. Or I have a book like it. It doesn't really matter if I've bought 2 copies of it, because that means I can give it away to somebody. So what have we got? Well, the first book is a book called Apple Acre by Adrian Bell. He is a beautiful writer who writes about farming. And that's the book that I read a little bit out of from in the Vobe Show one coming up. I won't read that same passage, but he does write. He writes incredibly sparingly, so sometimes it is difficult to read aloud on the first reading, because it takes a bit of time to get into the rhythm of that, of his writing. So this is just an example here. The Earth Crumbles. After 3 days in bed, 3 days and 3 nights of illness, I'm sitting at the window of my room, listening to the birds and feeling the sun. While I lay abed, the snow went and the birds began to sing. And down there in the earth, under the window, are crowds of snowdrops that take the wind altogether. After 3 days of brain ache, I cannot read, I cannot think. Only sit and be thankful for the sun. Such small things as snowdrops moving in the wind become eventful. The way each is hung upon the curved stem and their whiteness against the black earth, so quick after the dead white of the snow. Beautiful, beautiful stuff, beautiful. And again, look at that, the simplicity of life. Another book I've got, and I'm slightly concerned that I've already bought this one, and because I recognise the picture on the back and I feel I've read it as well, which is why it must have appealed to me, but I haven't been able to find this one on the shelf either. This is John Stuart Collis, a memoir by Richard Ingrams. Now, I've got another book by Richard Ingrams about William Cobbett. And I feel I did buy this, or I looked at it. I don't know. So this is a memoir of him, and it does ring a bell. I'll give you... John Stuart Collis was a writer, and he wrote about nature in the tradition of people like W.H. Hudson, Richard Jefferies, and so on. And one of his books that I've got is called The Worm Forgives the Plough. And it's a beautiful book. Again, it's writing. So this is a memoir about him. And here's a little excerpt. Collis's love of oratory also attracted him to the church, and he spent a short time at the Theological College immediately after leaving Oxford. But the influence of Bernard Shaw, whose play John Bull's Other Ireland had electrified him when he saw it in Dublin at the age of 16, and it was stronger than any of his other religious inclinations. He set out to write and vowed to begin by writing a book about his hero, Shaw. So he went to London and rented a room at the back of a pub in Rotherhithe Street, overlooking the river and Wapping. Rotherhithe Street, street of warehouses, of reoccurring pubs and water glimpses, unearthly street. Silent, empty, cobbled, cliffed in path by day, by night, by greater silence on the gleaming filthy stones, an echoing chasm where no mountains are, a gorge lit up by lampposts. See, I'm writing a book, but my writing is very bland compared to the superb writing, and I wish I could write in this way, but my book is a very different kettle of fish. But yes, it is, you know, when you meet a writer and their work, you meet a writer by their work, and they're so good, it quells your enthusiasm. I wish I could write like that. However, some books are not meant to be written in such a fashion that you just stand there and be startled by the writing. And they are written to inform you of certain things. And this is the last one in my pile that came yesterday. And again, I feel I have already bought this one. So these are the last two are the ones I feel I bought. This is by Graham Harvey. He was agricultural advisor to the BBC long-running radio soap, The Archers. And he wrote a book called We Want Real Food, and another book called something along the lines of The Destruction of the Landscape. And this one is called Grass-Fed Nation, which I feel I have got in a different format. This came out in 2016, and he talks of the terrible things that we've done to the agricultural. So I'm just trying to find a bit to read. So he talks about the farming of the last, since the war, the high industrial farming, the pesticides, the insecticides, the fungicides, the herbicides, and so on. The monoculture, the lack of everything. And the big industrialisation of it, and the supermarkets. He's very much against the supermarkets. Anyway, I'll read an extract here. To make matters worse, he says, the crops are killing us. The crops that are killing us are also killing the soils on which we all depend for our food and our health. The chemical used to grow these crops are steadily destroying the life of the soil. To stay healthy and productive, soil relies on a vast underground army of living organisms, from microscopic bacteria to earthworms. But the high-yielding wheats and oilseed crops that fill our fields can't survive without a routine fix of chemical fertilizers and pesticides. Unfortunately, these same chemicals damage the living communities of the soil. Robbed of this living component, soils are less able to supply nutrients to plants. To compensate, farmers have to apply even more agrochemicals, which further damages soil organisms. The whole ecosystem is caught up in a vicious spiral to destruction. It ends when the weakened soil becomes so unstable it's easily eroded away by water and wind. This is why so many of the world's rivers are changing colour. They're stained with the remnants of dying soils being washed away to the sea. It's why we ought to take notice. The stains are a sure sign not only that we're growing the wrong foods, that we're demolishing the only guarantee we have of a healthy future, fertile soil. Offhand, I can't think of a more effective way for a civilization to destroy itself apart, from perhaps engaging in nuclear war. And as it happens, my local river, the Tone, rises quite close to where I live in West Somerset. So I get to see the whole colour-changing progress. Whenever we get a spell of heavy rain, torrents of red-brown floodwater come gushing off the fields and down the steep lanes. They swell the river and stain it orange-brown as it flows under the town centre bridge in Taunton. Much of this cargo of silt would be dumped in the Somerset Levels, where the river takes a slow meandering course to join the River Parrot. The river runs orange-brown because that's the colour of our local soils, and because those soils are now sick. Healthy soils don't get washed away by rainstorms. Soils capable of growing nutrient-rich crops don't go floating off downstream. They don't clog up ditches and drains or deposit a sandpit at the side of a road. They stay put. The runoff water, if there is any, is clear. That's how it is in our towns and cities most of the time. When I drive through my local town, even during a heavy rainstorm, the rain that comes gushing down the street isn't muddy brown. It's always clear. Our parks and suburban gardens keep in good shape. It's the countryside where the damage is at its worst. Shockingly, it's modern farming methods that pose the main threat to our food supply and all who produce crops that will make many of us sick. It's a damning story of the farming, but intentional farming. The government has... It's difficult not to be conspiratorial when you know some of the other things that are going on. And it's not an accident that this style of farming has happened, has been encouraged, the profit margins have been held up, the farms have basically ripped up the hedgerows, turned into large fields, large scale, large machinery, large profits, large amount of poison, nutrient-free, vitamin-deficient food. It's very scary. And that's what the supermarkets are full of. And that's why you've got to get away from the supermarkets and go and buy your food from small-scale farm shops who actually supply the farm shops and tell the supermarkets, bog off, you are destroying everything by their race to the bottom in terms of price and these petrochemical-filled artificial synthetic foods which will damage us and kill us terribly. And we must resist this. But it's too easy to go to the supermarket, isn't it? People just go. They don't seem to care They fill the belly with something that seems like food, smells like food, doesn't taste like food, but they've got used to the taste. Those chemicals that add the artificial flavouring, the chemicals that give the colour so it looks like food. People are happy to take something which the body isn't used to, has no use for, and is damaging the cells. And yet people will still go to the supermarket and they will still buy this nutrient-free, vitamin-deficient food. Minerals lacking, and they will put it into their stomach and feel for a short time that they are sated, but they've just put pap of chemicals inside their system, and their body now has to try and deal with it. And deal with it, it does, to the best of its ability, until at some point the cells in that body cannot cope any longer with the poisonous lack of nutrient, mineral and vitamin goodness that it craves. And so the body begins to deteriorate, and that's when you get cancers and all these other strange illnesses. We have never been more ill. Look at how full the hospitals are. Look at how many people are on tablets, statins and all sorts of things, antidepressants, taking paracetamol and all the other so-called painkillers, and that we need all this attention. And we think that, oh, it's okay to have a riotous lifestyle. The thing, I mean, you know, people go out and maybe have a few pints, they may drink a bit of alcohol, they may smoke cigarettes, they may do all these different weird and wonderful things. And the body would probably cope with all of that if they were eating food that was real, that was a benefit. But if they do all of that, plus then they just put fake food into their belly, what do you suppose is going to happen? Why cannot people see this? Why are people so blind to it? And still they go, still they'll put fake food in, and then they'll take all the stimulants that they require to get through life. And because they are filling themselves with something which is deficient in goodness, they feel that they need the stimulants, and so they're just filling up more and more and more. They may as well just stick bleach down their neck and be done with it. Anyway, calming down. Interesting books. And sometimes, if you do buy the same book twice, it helps to underline the message that you have. It helps to give you the arguments. I'm sure that I've read the grass-fed thing. Wild New Farms. I'd be interested to see where he goes. In Search of Real Milk, there's a chapter here. Of course, real milk. It says proper milk, read the hand-painted sign at the side of a quiet Suffolk lane. I felt a small tremor of excitement. Proper milk isn't something you find much of in today's Britain. I turned off the lane and drove down the rutted track. It ended in a concrete yard beside a large open-fronted barn. As I stepped out of the car, I knew I'd come to the right place. On the far side of the low brick wall, a small group of Jersey cows grazed contentedly on a pasture full of clovers and herbs. The milk was going to be something special. I'd arrived at the aptly named Calf at Foot Dairy. It's called that because, unlike modern commercial dairy farms where calves are snatched from their mothers when they're just a day old or two, causing great stress to both, these calves stay suckling their mums for at least 9 months. On the day of my visit, there were 3 calves running with a small herd. Behind the name and the unusually humane system of milk production was a woman I'd come to see. Fiona Proven, first-time farmer and passionate animal welfare campaigner. She's been a cordon bleu cook and a seller of high-quality street food, but since childhood, when she lived next door to a dairy farm, she'd helped run her father and helped run her father's veterinary practice. Her greatest ambition was to look after cows. The dairy business she set up in Somerleyton near Lowestoft on the Suffolk-Norfolk border looks set to be a game changer in the industry. Anyway, he'll go on, but presumably he is talking about raw milk. And I shall be interested to read that chapter. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, 25 minutes into this, I'm going to pour myself a glass of raw milk to set myself up for the day. I've had a cup of coffee, horrible thing, really, in the great scheme of things, instant, whatever, but, you know, I'm not pious, I'm not holier than thou. We went to the farm shop, and here, from a mixed herd, I think, some raw milk. I would like either Jersey or Guernsey. Guernsey milk apparently is very creamy. And it's even more creamy than Jersey, I'm told. So I've read. Anyway, cheers. Raw milk. Full of good bacteria. Full of healthy stuff that will make you shine. We all should be drinking that. We should not be drinking the other shite that they put out across the world. The sun is shining this morning. I will upload this. Thank you very much for listening. If any of this has resonated with you, I am thrilled. Until next time, thank you. Ta-ta.